Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, August 4th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Events surrounding the U.S.-Africa summit kick off in Washington with the U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry urging African ministers to embrace free market ideals.
It's time to build a more open exchange of ideas and information. That's part of the reason President Obama thought of doing the summit that he's having this week. Here in Washington, it's to lead to greater partnership, to build our capacity for innovation.
It never rains but pours for Chingwizi residents in Mashingo following floods that displaced them in February. Now they are being forcibly removed from their transit holding camp without compensation.
There were trucks which were tearing people from the holding camp to the one float vehicles, which we were against of. So actually, there was a lot of chaos today.
And opposition MDC formations fight for political space in Matabeleland.
Events surrounding the summit between U.S. President Barack Obama and some 50 African heads of state kicked off in Washington today, with Secretary of State John Kerry urging African ministers to embrace free market ideals and U.S.-Africa cooperation at a forum focused on the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA. The secretary is due to meet with at least 8 visiting African leaders by the end of the day. President Obama will address a U.S.-Africa Business Forum tomorrow and take part in sessions focused on economic growth, regional security, and good governance on Wednesday. The U.S. is set to unveil nearly $1 billion in business deals, more funding for peacekeeping, and billions of dollars for food and power programs during the 3-day event.
We've seen imports from AGOA nations grow by 300%. Whether it's cocoa and cashews from Ghana, or textiles from Mauritius, or petrochemical products from Angola, AGOA has served as a catalyst for greater trade and prosperity, and it's helped to promote greater protections for the African workforce. And yes, we do have some of our own interests on the line here, too, and I say it up front. For instance, AGOA has made it possible for Ford Motor Company to export engines duty-free from South Africa, where Ford has invested over $300 million so they can supply engines worldwide. And the efficiencies of that operation have allowed Ford to create 800 new jobs at their Kansas City plant as part of the global production line. This is how it works.
That was U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. China and Europe and Japan have all held similar events to encourage investment in Africa, but the White House denies its Africa summit is in response to increasing investment in Africa from China. U.S. businesses have generally been hesitant to invest in Africa, despite the high growth rates seen in many countries.
Meanwhile, some Zimbabweans have welcomed the decision by the U.S. government not to invite President Robert Mugabe and his delegation to the U.S.-Africa summit that kicked off in Washington today. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Some Zimbabweans who spoke to Studio 7 today say the Washington administration was right to snub President Robert Mugabe, who is not among African leaders attending the U.S.-Africa summit in Washington, D.C. One such person is Titus Gobvu, who claims that President Mugabe's administration continues to violate people's rights in the country.
This shows that Mugabe does not recognize the human rights or even the rights of the youths in Zimbabwe, because as a youth member, this was the first opportunity ever we have had, but we have failed to be represented in that country just because of Robert Mugabe. Mugabe should not lead us from now on, as we have done before. We should show the nation that Mugabe is not the good leader who can represent us as youth.
Opposition activist Yvonne Msarurwa, who is facing murder charges for allegedly killing a police officer, says other world leaders should emulate America, adding Mr. Mugabe should not enjoy the freedom of what she termed globetrotting when his government is allegedly subjecting its citizens to abject poverty.
As the youths, that summit is going to engage youths. So if we as youths we are not being employed, there's no reason for Mugabe to go to that summit because it benefits us nothing.
Former Mbare legislator Pinia Odenga told Studio 7 that the Zimbabwe political leadership has a lot to learn from the country's absence at the US-Africa summit.
I think America was justified because if you are a leader, you have to listen to your people.
However, Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Chris Muchangwa says it's America's right to choose who and who not to associate with.
Well, you know, we do care. We are not invited. America is free to invite whomever it wants. It's their prerogative. We don't have a structured relationship with America. They've never believed in having a structured relationship with Africa. So we have no claim on how on whether we should be there or we should be not.
Muchangwa says Harare is doing all it can to normalize its relations with Washington, adding that Harare was being punished for embarking on land reforms in 2000 that displaced thousands of former white commercial farmers and their laborers.
We spare no effort as Zimbabwe to improve our relations with the United States. We didn't give them the power which they have. They are a major power. Their currency runs roost on all transactions in the world. You know, they are a major economy. We cannot take it away from them. We strive as much as we can to attract their attention so that we can improve on our relations. Because the grievance with Zimbabwe comes from that we dispossessed white people. That's the major grievance. If we didn't dispossess white people, we had appropriated our land by conquest. If we didn't do that, probably we have relations, good relations with them. But we won't sell our soul to America.
The summit is expected to tackle issues affecting the youth on the African continent, as well as strengthening economic and political ties between Washington and the rest of Africa. This U.S.-Africa summit is the first of its kind to be convened by an American president. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Thanks, Thomas. Blessing Zulu is covering the summit for us. He spoke earlier with Ndimiyake Mwakalieli.
The U.S.-Africa summit kicked off today in Washington, D.C. Nearly 50 African leaders are in attendance, with the exception of a few who are either not in good standing with America or who are specifically designated for U.S. sanctions. These, of course, include Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe, Sudan, Central African Republic, and Eritrea. President Obama is not expected to hold bilateral talks with all these leaders, but he will, however, engage broadly with all of them. This meeting is significant in that it is the first summit of its kind, which is seeing the largest number of African leaders meeting with a sitting U.S. president. Today, Monday, in the morning, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, in his remarks, urged African governments to work with civil society to ensure that democracy does take root in Africa. He also said that some leaders in Africa are overstaying due to work set institutions, and he promised that the NGOs that America will continue to work with them and also strengthen them. We did manage to talk to Zimbabwean Nixon Nikazino, a programs manager for Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition. Nixon told VOA Studio 7 that this summit is very significant, and also he urged the African Union to take a lead from the U.S. president to organize such meetings where leaders can also meet with civic leaders to ensure that there is no tension, as he says is happening in Zimbabwe, for example, where the government and the NGOs do not see eye to eye. There were 5 signature events, including one on health and civil society, and later on this evening there will be another one on AGOA that will also focus on trade between Washington and African states. And of course, the meetings are also significant in trying to promote trade and investment in Africa by the U.S. government. And of course, tomorrow, the U.S.-Africa Business Forum is going to be held, and leaders will engage with business executives from both sides of the Atlantic, and President Obama is also expected to participate.
Thank you so much. That was Blessing Zulu, who's covering the Africa Summit in Washington.
From the U.S.-Africa Summit, we go to Zimbabwe, where women and children at Chingwizi Transit Camp in Mwenezi District were today reportedly forced to bend down their tents and were being moved forcibly following a move by the country's soldiers yesterday to arrest more than 300 villagers in connection to an arson attack on a police vehicle Friday. Lawyers from Zimbabwe Human Rights Lawyers, who have since this morning been denied access to the villagers, say they have now been allowed to see their clients at the Triangle Police Station. At least 18 men and 9 women remain in custody, while the chairperson of the representative body of the villagers is said to have been severely injured. The villagers at Chingwizi, who were displaced by the Tokwemkosi Dam floods, have rejected moves by the government to relocate them without compensation. Reporter Atatenda Gumbo spoke with Chingwizi Transit Camp resident Milton Shumba, who says his family is in the process of being relocated, adding the situation in the area is dire.
There were trucks which were returning people from the holding camp to the one plot hectares, which we were against of. So actually, there was a lot of chaos today.
We understand yesterday that a majority of the men from the camp were arrested. What happened to them?
We have got no idea of what happened to them, because as it is now, there is no communication, no nothing. I like to believe that they were forced to switch off their phones, or the phones were taken.
So who exactly gave this directive today, or the women and children, to burn down the tent?
The directive, of course, came from Minister Basketi, because from the onset, Minister Basketi is the one who was forcing us to move from the Chingwizi holding camp to the one plot hectares. So he is the one who gets that directive. Because as it is, you know, he came the day before and said, by today, everybody else will be moved from Chingwizi holding camp to the one plot hectare.
And you are one of the residents that had already fled. Have you been in communication with your family?
Yes, I've been communicating with my family, and the children and my wife were busy destroying the tents. It's not how I fled as such. I had gone, myself and some of my friends, we had gone to wait from the neighboring people who were already there. So when we came in the evening, we found out that the whole camp was surrounded by the police. Then we thought, no, it was not a good idea to enter into such a situation.
That was Chingwizi Transit Camp resident Milton Shumba.
MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai was in Matabelele North, South and Bulawayo over the weekend, where he met with the provincial structures, explaining to them the elections, rules and regulations the party is going to use at its National Congress this October. Party spokesman Douglas Monzora says the three provinces also made it clear that they were against the proposal of having a party second vice president. Monzora speaks with reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
We were there to discuss a lot of issues on the Congress that is coming. We were discussing the way the Congress is going to be held. And we were discussing this with the provincial assemblies for Matabeleland North and Matabeleland South and Bulawayo. We were with our president, President Tsvangirai, Vice President Kupe, the leadership of the party, and the leaders of the standing committee.
We understand that these three provinces also raised the issue of the second vice president in the party. What did they say?
Yes, we are also dealing with the issues of the constitution, aligning our constitution to what we want as the MDC, given our recent history. The issue of vice president was debated. There are two schools of thought. One is that we must continue to have one vice president. The second one is that we must have two vice presidents just in line with the country's constitution. But what is clear is that in Matabeleland, North, South and Bulawayo, they prefer one vice president.
How is the party going to deal with this?
The country's constitution has required two vice presidents since 1987, the time of the Unity Accord. So it's nothing new. But once the party is in power, it has won, then it's easy to choose another vice president. It can choose once it has won, or it can choose as it is approaching elections during nomination. So the argument is that there is hurry. But others think that we can choose the vice president right now at this Congress.
That was MDCT spokesman Douglas Muonzora speaking with reporter Jonga Kandemiri from Bulawayo. While Mr. Tsvangirai was addressing his party's last rally in Gwanda, Matabeleland South yesterday, the renewal team led by its interim leader, Tendai Biti, was in Lupane in Matabeleland North, where Mr. Biti called for a national transitional technical committee that will look at the current state of the economy. Jonga Kandemiri spoke earlier with renewal team spokesman Jacob Mafume.
In Matabeleland North, we were meeting the provincial structures. We were being hosted by the chairperson, Sawangu, who hosted us at that meeting. We were looking at the structures. These were coming from all over. We were in Lupane. They were coming from Binga, Vic Falls, Cholocho, and all the constituencies that are surrounding the area. What we needed to do was to inform them of the development of the party, the results of the National Working Committee, the fact that we are now using Orange as a party, and also to answer and to look at how far the party is faring in Matabeleland North.
How did the people of Matabeleland North reacted to the fact that the MDC party has split, now there's the renewal team?
Well, they were overexcited, they were ecstatic. They were saying this move was overdue. They have been waiting for a long time. And they were saying that there were no tangible benefits that they had received over the years for what support they had given. It is only when Stepankomo came to open a dam that a major development happened in Lupane. And it was only when the finance minister, Tendai Biti, funded the building of Lupane University. Now, sadly, construction is stopped at Lupane University. So they were pointing out that the renewal was the way to go. They were prepared to move in a new direction.
And that was renewal team spokesman Jacob Mafume in Harare.
The Bulawayo Progressive Residents Association says it has made remarkable contributions to local governance issues in the past few years, including successfully campaigning against the imposition of special interest councillors by the Ministry of Local Government. This was revealed during the association's general elections held yesterday evening in Bulawayo, where most of the leadership retained their posts. The association's organizing secretary, Ambrose Sebindi, tells reporter Stanekile Mhlanga allegations that his association campaigned for the MDCT, which won all parliamentary and council seats in Bulawayo, are not true because the membership of his organization comprises of people from different political and religious affiliations.
We have tried to educate people that they need to participate in decision-making on issues of local governance. We are saying when council brings up budget issues, people must come up and come with views. For instance, with an issue by one time Minister Chombo wanted to impose these special interest councillors, and I was saying it's part of the Urban Councils Act. But we were saying, no, why then bring in people who lost in the elections when they wanted to be councillors? And we stood our ground, we opposed that, even Koli Kali, we managed to win that. Further to that, there are issues to do with water challenges. For instance, now as I speak, there is a serious challenge that council wants to bring up a project of water prepaid meters. we are saying at the moment that program will not work. Council seems to be adhering to our voices. And there are also issues of to do with social care transfer, where the situation whereby people not deserving were part of the beneficiaries. And those who were making up those communities wanted to let Bob pay $5, saying it's a commission fee. And there is the issue of, again, where situations whereby companies come here, they win tenders, and they want to employ people to do minimal jobs from outside the region. We stood our ground and said, no. Where the situation whereby Zina wanted to take over the water situation in local authorities. Yes, we stood our ground and we won the case.
That was Ambrose Ibindi, Organizing Secretary for the Bulawayo Progressive Residents Association, on the line from Bulawayo.
The Broadcasting Authority of Zimbabwe, BAZ, has scheduled public hearings in 5 towns and cities for aspiring provincial commercial radio broadcasters starting August 19 through August 29. The hearings will be held in Maswingo, Zushabane, Gweru, Mutare and Kariba, where aspirants on the Broadcasting Authority's shortlist will be given the opportunity to sell themselves to the public. The companies seeking licenses include Super Mandiwanzira's AB Communications and the state-run Zim Peppers, which are already broadcasting after securing licenses in 2012. The Broadcasting Authority's announcement came as SW Radio Africa announced that it will permanently shut down August 10 due to financial constraints. The British-based station that started broadcasting to Zimbabwe in 2001 stopped its shortwave programming last month but had continued casting on the internet. However, today, station founder and editor Jerry Jackson said in a statement that SW Radio Africa is stopping all forms of broadcast and closing shop. Reporter Ntungameli Nkomo reached Mr. Zimbabwe Programs Officer Thabani Nyoni, who starts off by giving his perspective on the BAZ public hearings.
We have always said it is good that we open up or liberalize the airways, but what we have a concern area is the knee-jerk approach which is used by the Broadcasting Authority of Zimbabwe. At this moment, they've prioritized Maswingo, Mutare, Kariba, Shawane, and Gweru. But they have not indicated when Bulawayo and Harare will be conducting these public hearings. So what we are saying is it must not be at the mercy of the Broadcasting Authority of Zimbabwe. What we need to do is to review the legal framework so that it instructs the Broadcasting Authority of Zimbabwe to come up with demarcations and timelines on when it is supposed to regularly call for the licensing of new players. So we insist that the Broadcasting Authority of Zimbabwe should have a comprehensive schedule of when they are going to issue out licenses, not only to commercial interests, but also to community radio broadcasting. But for this to happen, we also need to review the law, the Broadcasting Services Act, so that it espouses the democratic nature of licensing.
SW Radio Africa also announced today that it's shutting down permanently because of financial constraints. What do you make of that development?
It's said, given that we don't at any time condone the shrinkage of media space, be it to the caprices of politics or to the caprices of economic underperformance. What we then call for the present-day entrepreneurs who are in the business of information dissemination is to embrace new ways of sustainability, especially during these trying times of recession at Zimbabwe level and the shrinkage of funding at global stage, so that the people who are within these spaces of information dissemination will create new ways of income generation, new thinking, especially tapping into the emerging information and communication technologies.
That was Mr. Zimbabwe Programs Officer Thabani Nyoni on the line with Studio 7's Ntungameli Nkomo from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency. Yes, Chris, as we know, the three-day U.S.-Africa Leader Summit started today in Washington, D.C. This is amid concerns that African leaders are not fully prepared to meet U.S. President Barack Obama and other American leaders at a time when Africa needs billions of dollars in foreign direct investment and help in curbing armed militant groups threatening to overrun some parts of the continent. Also, the exclusion of longtime Zimbabwean leader President Robert Mugabe has been a topic at the summit both here and in Zimbabwe. Gibbs Dube has got a report looking at those issues.
At least 50 African leaders have arrived in the U.S. capital for the summit, whose theme is Investing in the Next Generation. Deliberations will center on catering for the needs of millions of young people in Africa and the strengthening of socio-economic and political ties between the U.S. and Africa. Some critics believe that African leaders did not properly plan for the event. According to Professor Shadrack Guto of the University of South Africa, the African Union does not have a clear agenda at the summit.
That's where there's a problem in Africa. When such meetings are called, they don't coordinate their activities properly at the African Union level so that they come with a properly thought out agenda which they will push and see whether they will get something out of it.
Professor Kuto says African leaders should have outlined a clear position based on its inclusive growth and development strategy, dubbed the Africa Agenda 2063.
Many countries are coming there just to push their own little small agendas.
At its heart, this new African roadmap emphasizes the rekindling of Pan-Africanism, a sense of unity, self-reliance, integration, and solidarity that was the highlight of the triumphs of the 20th century. Political analyst Ipo Mandaza of the Southern Africa Political and Economic Series, or SAPES, echoes the same sentiments.
We must go beyond symbolism and rhetoric. I think there's not been enough thinking into the relationship. It's symbolic and not strategic at all. And piecemeal. What is the forum about? What are the issues? How are these issues discussed before the summit? What has been the position of Africa itself vis-à-vis the U.S.? What is the position of the AU vis-à-vis the U.S.? I think, if you ask me, it's a waste of time.
Independent political commentator Nkosilati Kanye also believes that the lack of a common position will have a negative impact on rolling out empowerment programs for the next generation set to dominate deliberations at the summit.
It means we are not going to benefit anything out of it. Future is only for the youth. There is no future for the elders. And those other countries which are invited, they will benefit quite a lot in a very fast speed compared to those countries that are not invited like us.
He further says it is embarrassing that President Mugabe has been left out of the summit together with leaders of Eritrea, Sudan and the Central African Republic with a record of human rights abuses.
We were supposed to be invited so that we can learn something and get something out of it and also say what we need for this country, especially the youth. That is why they started calling the youth first, so that they want to hear what the youth need.
But Dr. Mandaza disagrees, saying the exclusion of Mr. Mugabe shows a high degree of intolerance by the American government towards ZANU-PF.
They must make a distinction between Mugabe and Zimbabwe, and they failed to do that, the Americans. Secondly, they must look beyond Mugabe. I think the Americans are being very negative in their perception and in their strategy on Zimbabwe. Other countries of the world, the EU, are all moving forward, and the Americans are lagging behind. This is not about Mugabe, it's about Zimbabwe, for heaven's sake.
Professor Kuto agrees, noting that the exclusion of President Mugabe is an irritation to the ZANU-PF government.
Him not being there will not sound very good for other African countries, because Zimbabwe will say, but why did you go when you knew that other leaders were not being invited?
And for political activist Maureen Gatemaunga of the Movement for Democratic Change led by Moken Tsvangirai, President Mugabe has become a political and economic liability for Zimbabwe.
Mugabe has become a political cost for Zimbabwe. And we are failing, you know, to mix and gel in with the family of nations and to trade and to have political relations with other countries because we have an illegitimate government.
But ZANU-PF spokesman Rukare Kumbo says the summit is just a waste of time.
It doesn't affect us at all. Our line is that we look east, and as far as we are concerned, that is enough.
At least 20 African nations have duty-free access to United States markets under the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA, a U.S. law designed to assist economies of sub-Saharan Africa. Africa sells over 7,000 products to the US worth $27 billion. It still remains to be seen whether Africa will benefit from the ongoing summit, the first of its kind held by an American president. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, D.C., this is Kip Stube.
That's